Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know, these aren't gas station glasses. These are Canon sunglasses that you have on the golf course.
Movement sunglasses.
Yeah, which you need, which I recommend to everybody. They're like HD vision. So I give the guy...
Those atomic glasses that we love.
Nice.
From Tonto Toronto.
Nice. So I give the guy the money. He throws the bag of fruit to the monkey. The monkey looks at him, basically smiles, throws the glasses at me. Literally throws them at me.
Great.
And that was it.
That's great.
I'm not even mad because that game was so
good.
It would
have been worth $20.
It was such a good
scam. They're working together. How great is that?
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, it's a Friday show. We've got Gary Braun. We've got Gene McManus. We've got Michael Kornheiser. Nigel's here to run the board and do the news. We are at Chatter. We have a nice breakfast crowd. Hello, everybody. We're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest in Friendship Heights. We want to wish a happy birthday to Stephen Halter, Steve the Sycophant. Happy birthday to Stephen. He is here today. I'm very happy about that.
Nice round of applause for Steve the Sycophant.
Got some stuff here. We'll talk about this stuff from Cameron from Provo. I guess that's Provo, Utah, since I don't know any others. I'm a loyal little since the podcast days from Provo, Utah, in fact. In the package, you'll find Chatter and podcast bottle openers that the woman to whom I'm related by marriage has produced. Feel free to use them yourself or hand them out as prizes to your patrons. Her company, Engravologist. Engravologist makes custom engraving easy. If anyone is interested in more, email her or go to the website. It's Natalie, N-A-T-A-L-I-E, at engravologist.com.
I didn't know engravology was a thing.
It's volcanology.
Yeah. So we have bottle openers from Chatter and from Tony, which are very, very nice.
Nice.
Which we will give out to people if anybody wants. And from Jimmy Smith at Gonzaga University. We're going to get to Gonzaga in a little bit because they played last night. Dear Dr. Kornheiser, I was recently at Chatter in February to not only watch you and the gang do what you do best, thanks for the jar of fluff, by the way, but also to scout you for a faculty position within the Gonzaga University Master of Arts in Sports and Athletic Administration in Spokane, Washington. I am pleased to recognize that you, Dr. Tony Kornheiser, are certified as an honorary faculty member with the Gonzaga University Masters of Art and Sports and Athletic Administration program. Given this new achievement that I add parenthetically, I'm sure will go nicely next to your Emmy in your bathroom. Two Emmys, two bathrooms. Thank you. We hope that you will return the courtesy and proclaim the Gonzaga University Masters of Arts in Sports and Athletic Administration program as the official... Well, see, I've never heard of this, so of course it becomes the official Masters of Arts in Sport and Athletic Administration program of the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Congrats.
And we have a lovely plaque.
We'll send the invoice.
It certifies that Dr. Anthony Irwin Kornheiser has achieved this, and this will go up probably in one of the bathrooms. A check.
Yeah, maybe next to the Faber College.
Yeah, the Faber College.
Yeah, we need to keep a list of all the endorsed programs.
You're getting quite the
running out of real
educational credentials.
And so speaking of Gonzaga,
catching up to your kid.
Yesterday, there are four games to reach the round of eight yesterday in the far brackets as you look at your brackets.
Left to right across your radio dial.
The far brackets, not the near brackets.
The southeast.
And this was, these were the ones... where none of the ones existed anymore.
Right.
Xavier didn't exist anymore, and Virginia didn't exist anymore, as opposed to...
And none of the twos existed
Villanova,
anymore.
Which
Virginia
exists
lose?
In Kansas. Virginia lost early to an America East team. So the question facing Wilbon and me was this yesterday. Which of the lower-seeded teams do you have the most confidence in? And Wilbon immediately said... Because he had found out that Loyola was Loyola of Chicago.
Yeah, of course. He's
he had found that out over the last month or so. He said, Loyola of Chicago, Loyola, 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 and Sister Jean, Sister Jean, Sister Jean, you know, okay. So then I said, are you done? And he said, yeah. And I said, first of all, I have no particular faith in Loyola because Loyola shouldn't be here. Because Loyola needed a last second shot by the kid Custer, and they shouldn't even be here. And I said... And I have no particular faith in Nevada because they were down 22 and they shouldn't really be here. So I said, if I had to bet this game, I wouldn't. I'd walk on this game.
I understand. If you had to bet it, you wouldn't?
No, I would walk on the game. I didn't want the game.
But what if you had to bet it?
No, I wouldn't.
So you were just talking about the four games that were played last night.
But if it was required.
So I'm going through all of the stuff that we go through. Then I looked at Texas A&M and Michigan and I said, Texas A&M had the most of all the teams we're going to talk about here. Texas A&M had the most impressive win. They drilled North Carolina.
Which is why you should have no confidence.
So I said, but Michigan, which also does not deserve to be here, because they had a ridiculous shot after two missed foul shots. They're the luckiest team in the whole thing. I said, but I saw them beat Purdue and Michigan State on successive nights, the most impressive thing I saw all year. So I'm going to go with them, not going to go with Texas.
You go with Michigan to win, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I said, I can't believe Kentucky's going to lose to Kansas State. No. I mean, I just can't even believe it. I mean, I just don't think it's going to happen.
No.
So I said, so now I am stuck with picking Florida State, a 9, over Gonzaga, a 4. And I said, now, normally what I would have done, and this is apropos of this Gonzaga thing, is I would have railed against Gonzaga, as I did every single year until last year, including last year, actually, that they're in a terrible conference and they're not prepared for the NCAAs and they come in overrated and overseeded and then they lose. Last year, they got to the final game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I said, and I have no faith in Florida State, but this is the last one we're going to talk about, so I'm going to pick Florida State. So it turns out that I was right and Wilbon was right. I watched the first two games. Loyola, the Loyola-Nevada game was one of the really good games I've ever seen in terms of stylistic contrast.
Yeah.
Nevada
yeah.
has pros. Nevada has long, lean guys, a couple of twins who are good.
Two twins.
They're good. They're really good, but Loyola was patient and smart and made extra passes and got people free right at the rim, surprising the taller, more athletic Nevada team. And when Loyola lost the lead late, they came back and they won the game.
Really fun to watch.
I love that point guard.
I mean, a different offense, but reminiscent to me.
Sort of Virginia-like.
Of watching Virginia, or I was going to go back and even say the Princeton teams of like 20 years ago. Not that they were running a Princeton offense, but
Princeton used to have a 6'11 guy all the time.
Yes, they did. And these guys didn't. But they took their big
guy out of the game for large chunks of the game.
Watching a smaller team not dominate the paint, but seemingly get all their points in the paint.
And understand that your shot can't get blocked if you release it right at the rim.
Yes, and use the rim.
They were so well coached, and they understood their talent so well. And the other team was good.
Yeah, very
good. But the other team had no particular go-to set. They were ready. They're a freelance team, which works. But that was a really great,
very, very good game,
entertaining game, wasn't it?
Was that the Loyola coach's like lucky outfit that he
had on? Isn't it?
It was a paisley tie, a check shirt,
and a plaid jacket.
That is brutal.
Like a lot happening there.
Yeah, too
like
much.
The tie is saying one thing and the shirt's saying something else. I hope it's his lucky outfit that's why he had it on.
It's possible he's not a sighted guy, or at least he can't tell shapes.
But he is a good coach.
He's a very good coach. So I watched that. And I went back and forth every once in a while to the Michigan. Michigan made their first 7 threes. Michigan made 14 of 24 threes and shot 62% overall and scored 99 points. They were up by 20 in the first half. Michigan did to Texas A&M what Texas A&M did to North Carolina.
Yeah. I think maybe they were up only 20 at halftime is what you mean. Actually, they were up 24 at halftime. But 24. I believe they were up 29 in the first half at one point.
Just, you know. They were really, really good. They were really good. So I was thrilled to watch that. I didn't watch the others.
And by the way, as far as kind of handicapping it, A&M, I mean, I'm a little bit of a contrarian, but for the exact A&M's reason you cited, because A&M had
was
just
so
destroyed Carolina, and Michigan had kind of gotten lucky, and I mean, you say they didn't deserve to be there. I mean, I think what you meant was simply they got lucky, but they hadn't played well yet, really, in the tournament.
So do you think, using that logic, will you pick Loyola to beat Michigan?
No, because I think at some point the cream rises to the top, and
that's
Michigan,
what they said about Abdul-Jabbar. The Kareem rises to the top.
The Kareem?
Yeah, that's what they said.
I would not take Loyola.
I watched late game. But I like the first two games, I focused almost completely on the Loyola game, Nevada game.
They're the darlings.
And I kept going to Michigan, and there was nothing to watch. So then I really got into the Kentucky game and just could not believe what I was watching.
So Kentucky has real talent, but I don't know anything about Florida State. They're a mid-level team in the ACC at this point. That's what they are. Florida State and Kansas State are in the round of 8 with 11 losses. 11 losses. In many, many years, that doesn't get you in a tournament. But this year, so many teams had so many losses. Michael, did you watch any of this, or were you just playing with the booster?
No, we were watching most of the early game, and that the Loyola ending was fantastic.
It was.
Tried to get into the Michigan game, but as Gary said, it was over and wasn't worth watching for us.
The FSU Gonzaga, and I took the bullet for all of us and stayed up and watched that one till the very end. FSU looked really, really athletic against the Gonzaga team. They look bigger. They look faster. Now, I've kind of bought into the Gonzaga story all these years. I've liked them. I've enjoyed them. And something happened last night. I don't know what it is.
They lost
by
15.
But I saw a sideline shot of Mark Few with the button-down blue Oxford and the blue blazer wearing his uniform.
That's what he does, yeah.
And it just I just broke. I was just like, I'm sick of seeing this guy come here and underperform. Get out. I'm off the Gonzaga.
He busted
train.
Too many my brackets too many years ago.
I didn't have them going on.
Again,
but.
This is because they're in a weak conference, and
they
haven't even played the good teams in the draw.
And you
yet.
Look at the bracket every year, and you see the 30-4, and you say, I know they have an RPI in the hundreds.
They also
but
have pros.
Yeah.
They have send
well,
pros.
Last year's team was really good.
It was.
It was really good. I mean, they had real players on that team.
So now, Tony, if you're asked the same question today, are you going to pick Syracuse?
No, because I don't think – I think the lock of the tournament is Duke beating Syracuse because they play each other so often, twice a year, all the time. And Duke really has a lot more talent. I don't look at – the only one that I would say, and I don't even think Texas Tech Purdue qualifies, I think it's possible West Virginia can beat Villanova because they play such great defense. But Villanova has a great point guard. This is a different – I don't think that'll be the question today. I'm not sure what Matt and Eric will come up with. But I don't necessarily think that's it. Maybe Clemson. Maybe if you watch Florida State, which is a 9 seed from the ACC, and you watch all these ACC teams that are still in it, like Duke and Syracuse, maybe you look at Clemson and say that Clemson can beat Kansas. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kansas, but Loyola remains the darling here.
So that 9-11, it's the first time they've ever had a 9-11 matchup in the Elite Eight. Yeah.
So I asked this yesterday because this is not my side of the street. I am not Catholic. Luckily, we have Catholic here who went to, you know, visitation.
Blessed Sacrament, and visitation. Georgetown visitation.
So what I noticed was that when all of the players come over to Sister Jean, who is 98 years old, they embrace her, but they don't actually kiss her cheek. Hmm. It's just that. And so what I asked yesterday was, is there a prohibition in Catholicism about kissing a nun? Is it? Are you not supposed
not
to?
Not technically, no. I mean, you're allowed to kiss a nun, but there's a nunness. There's an aura of a nun that a hug.
A nun and a nun and a nun. Go.
A hug. But I don't think I've ever kissed a nun.
Well, you were happy when your school burned down.
Yes, well, but I had an alibi. Right.
She could also, at 98, maybe they're just that, worried Bruce she's McManus. Immunocompromised.
So that was, I mean, I, but I sort of wondered, because you watch this all the time.
Teenagers.
Howard Feinman has come in. He has come to drop off Safeway coupons for me. I went to 350 yesterday, didn't get any. Very
it's
good,
not
Howard.
In there.
Very good. Thank you, Howard.
And don't say that we're not loyal here.
It's very, very good. Howard is here. Right. Not to talk about it, and just to drop it
off. And now back to the Trump administration. Right.
I wondered about that. Thank you, Howard.
There's no particular protocol, but I do think that
it stood out to me.
Yeah, you know, what you're saying. Yeah. I know what you're saying, but
she's
just
98. And by the way, she didn't have him going to the 8.
No.
I don't know why they're even going over to her.
Yeah, why would she?
I mean, she didn't have him going to the 8. I asked Wilbon if she ever taught at St. Ignatius, and we looked it up, and she had not taught at St. Ignatius because that's his high school and all that. He's rooting for them. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have Ann Hornaday. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Movement Sunglasses ad. Mm. Luke, had he had Movement sunglasses,
would have been fine.
The monkey couldn't even swipe them.
The price of the fruit would have gone up. Well,
That's certainly true.
High quality.
Spring is right around the corner. Actually, it isn't. Actually, it's still cold. And Movement, MVMT, is how it looks when you go to the website, is dropping all new sunglasses to get you ready for the warmer weather. We've got our go-to shades for it all. The guys at Movement don't just make great watches. They also make awesome sunglasses and just released a ton of new style. A lot of people buy cheap sunglasses. They look terrible, and they don't want them. And then they buy $200 sunglasses, and they feel like they've spent too much money. So Movement is clearly going to be in between there. They aren't plastic. They're acetate. You can get them polarized. They start at at $70. They are serious go-to shades. They're high-quality premium acetate frames. There's no cheap plastic. You've got to see them. Lots of styles to choose from. Classic, trendy, round, aviator, mirrored, polarized for him and for her and anybody else. You're sure to find the perfect pair. And if you can, you can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movement.com/Tony. Movement, you need to know, is MVMT. We call it Movement because we can't say...
We have an update.
What?
You are going to get your very own pair of the 2018 newly released Movement sunglasses.
So nice. I'm happy about that because I just dropped $400 on two Maui's gyms a little while ago.
You'll lose them.
At the Sunglass Hut in Rehoboth. I'll break them.
Let me point out, the free returns is key because something like sunglasses, some people, you might want to try them on before you decide. And I hate when you, and Gene will relate to this more than you since I know you don't shop online, but like you get something and you want to return it, and it's like, oh, 20% restocking fee.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks.
No, so this is free returns.
Sweet, yeah.
Free shipping, free returns. You know Movement for how they've revolutionized the watch industry. Now it's time to check out these sunglasses. Go to MVMT, that's Movement. Go to MVMT.com/Tony and join the movement.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from John Von Volkley. He writes, last year you were gracious enough to play a song of mine entitled Soup for One. I thought it would be worthwhile to share, both with your crew and my fellow littles, a song called Zanbar Bungalow. It's from my upcoming release, Woof, which in retrospect should have been called Woff.
Woff, should have been, right. Yeah.
A question to consider while listening to this song is it better to know what it's like to feel something or to feel what it's like to know something? That is so far above
so
my
deep.
Head.
So deep.
That is like, that's like, it's not how fast you mow, it's how you mow fast. And I just say, you know what, stop. Stop.
And I believe.
But we like this song.
Yes, and I believe he goes.
He goes by the name Rambus.
Rambus.
Not Kurt Rambus. Zanbar Bungalow. And he plays
not John J. Rambus. That was Rambo.
He plays in Anne Hornaday. And before we get to the movies, Anne, born and raised in Iowa, going back to Iowa. You have an appearance in Iowa, I'm told, by Nigel?
I do. I'm going back to my old hometown. I'm going back to the town of my birth, which I barely remember because we moved shortly thereafter. So I'm so excited I get to go to Iowa City.
That's nice. Iowa City is nice. That's where Iowa State is, isn't it? Isn't that the
University? No, University of Iowa.
Oh, University of Iowa is in Iowa City.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, the Hawks. Hawkeyes. Okay. This is Hawkeye country, not Cyclone country.
So where are you going to be? So if any littles in Iowa want to see you, they can do so.
Absolutely. I will be this wonderful film group called Film Scene is they've organized an entire month of programming around women. It's called Women's March, and I get to go be a part of that on Sunday at 4 p.m. So go to icfilmscene.org. That's like Iowa City Film Scene, icfilmscene.org, and get all the deets and come on and say hello.
By the way, and I ask this as a talking to you as a film person, should we refer to Stormy Daniels as a porn star or an adult film star?
God, this is a new one for me. Is it too early in the morning for me? I don't know. I noticed that they're
it goes back and forth.
The other person as a model. I mean, what's the most respectful? I don't know.
Film star would seem to me to be called?
My default is always, what does she want to be called?
I don't think she cares as long as there's money in it.
Yeah.
I don't really think she cares at this point. But I would say adult film star
would
be the more respectful.
Yeah, I think most networks have chosen that.
CNN went back to porn stars.
I think when they want to make it tawdry and sort of salacious, that's what I think.
Can I just say this? If I ran CNN, if I was the head of CNN, no matter what story I was having people talk about in those endless 8-wide panels, I'd run pictures of Stormy Daniels behind it 24 hours a day to build an audience.
Especially of her taking the polygraph.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I will...
Because that suggests the one question. Those real? I mean, because, that's...
I'm willing to spend the weekend refamiliarizing myself with her work, and I'll get back to you on whether porn or adult is more appropriate.
All right, let's start with some movies.
Sorry.
So we have a second movie, the Lara Croft Tomb Raider movie. At one point,
that
was
a million years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Angelina Jolie was the original. Now she's out, and
Ex Machina. What's her name?
Alicia Vikander,
who's been nominated multiple times, I think, for Academy Awards.
She won. Yes.
Yeah.
So, what do you make of that movie?
Well, it's interesting because when Angelina did it, she played a kind of superhuman, not even real person. You know, I mean, it was taken from a video game, and so she really kind of played up the video game, the unreality of the character. She looked like she couldn't exist in the real world, and so this one, she definitely is a real world character. She's very grounded. She's not nearly as impossibly buxom and tiny waist and the bug. She just looks like a real person and acts more like a real person. It's very much, I mean, you sit there and all you can think of is Indiana Jones, Rambo. It's very derivative.
Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Like,
it is, but it's like at least if you're trying to do this, bring a little something novel to the table.
And right.
I didn't feel that it did. I really loved her. I think she's a really good actress. I wish that she had had more to work with. It's like every scene resolved with her hanging by her fingernails from something. You know, she just needs better material to work with. But you know, what are you going to do?
All right, so we're moving on from that. There's the big release. I think it's the big release because Bill Murray is in it and Wes Anderson directed. It's called Isle of Dogs. I if I'm not mistaken, this is not real people. There's like there's like animation. It's not for me, right? It's not.
I wouldn't put you into this movie right now.
Yeah.
I don't think this is where. Now tell me where you are with Wes Anderson.
I think he's. I think like most people who become the darlings of certain types of people, he's a bit overpraised.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like.
What was the last thing?
This happens in sports as well. This happens in sports as well, that some people can do no wrong when he's not that good.
Exactly.
It's not that good.
Right.
Greg Popovich. It's not that good.
Yeah, I'm definitely on that kind of, you know, I was not as charmed by this as my colleagues. If you go to Metacritic, I'm down there, you know.
Yeah.
I'm bringing up the rear here with this one because. It is a stop motion animated movie like Fantastic Mr. Fox. Did you ever see that one?
I saw parts of it.
Is that Clooney?
I'm not a fan of that type of movie. The only one like that I have ever liked, and it's not quite like that, is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Right.
And I'm going back 30 years, and that's the only one I've ever liked. So I don't watch.
When
them.
Was the last one you saw?
That's 20. Yeah. You know, I just don't watch them. That's not. They're not for
this
me.
This isn't for you. This is not something that
I'm not saying they're bad.
I can't wait to tell Tony about this. Exactly. Yeah. It's not. You're not the audience for it. And one of my questions, though, is who is the audience other than just diehard Wes Anderson fans? Because there's enough darkness and kind of sadness and real suffering and grief in this movie that I wouldn't send little kids to it, you know?
Right.
I happened to see it with my friend and colleague, Benjamin Price, and he's 12, and he loved it. So that might be the sweet spot. It's like older kids, you know, like not little kids, but kids who are a little bit more mature. But the technical craft of it is beyond reproach. It's absolutely gorgeous to look at. Yeah.
So are nice houses in the afternoon sunlight. I mean, nice houses in the afternoon sunlight are gorgeous to look at, but I'm not going to pay to see them. You know,
the story did not wow me, and I thought, you know, it does. It's his sensibility is very precious, and it's very, it kind of toggles between ironic, irony, and laughing quietly in a superior way, and then just full out naivete. And I don't find that a particularly convincing combination, and I actually find it a little alienating and bothersome. And not to say I have loved his movies in the past. I mean, it's a hit and miss thing with him with me. It's like,
what have you loved? What have you loved?
Oh, I love Steve Zissou. I love Rushmore. I've actually loved more than I haven't. Although I was not a Grand Budapest person either.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not.
So I'm going to tell you that my sense of his movies are that they are very static looking. They pose people in doorways all the time.
Yes,
irony and superiority are absolutely the words that I would use.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe is in everyone, and you just want to punch him in the throat.
Not in
Bill Murray's in everyone, too. It's not that they're... Rushmore was a great movie. It's not that they're... terrible.
Exactly.
It's that at some point in the movie you say to yourself, well, isn't he congratulating himself just a little too much? So
right,
I'm not the world's biggest fan. Did he do the Royal Tenenbaums too? Right? I think they're overpraised by a little. That's all. That's what I think.
I hear what you're saying, and I do think he's an example, and I've written about this a lot, especially lately in light of the whole Me Too and Time's Up thing, this male auteurism that we, like you said, we worship them and we just love, you know, we just go gaga.
Well, that's your fault.
You know, when they're really kind of handing in things they've done before.
This started with Judith Crist, didn't it? I mean, the sort of idolatry of directors.
Well, you know, it,
am I wrong?
I don't know that I don't associate her with that. I really think Andrew Sarris is the one who imported the auteur theory to America, if you really want to go back.
That's fine.
And Pauline Kael had hers, too. She had
Pauline Kael is, yes, that's who I meant, Pauline Kael.
The ones that could do no wrong. And I just think we're all a little bit too, and it really comes into the fore at Cannes. Like, that's where I just think it gets out of hand, where they bring in mediocre work by their pets, by these guys, and they're usually guys.
Yeah, there's
some women, too. Yeah. Some women who don't deserve to be there. But because
it's the amen chorus for these people. Look, we had this yesterday on PTI. We do birthdays every day. We did birthday for J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is a great player. J.J. Watt's a great player. The analogy I'm going to make is this. J.J. Watt was three times already Defensive Player of the Year. But he played five games last year, and he played three the year before. And if you're going to be a great player, you got to get on the field. And some of these directors, you know, they did something great at some point, and now they're living on it. You know, it's
I hear you.
Right? I analogize everything to sports because I'm stupid.
I almost feel like we should, as critics, like not know who did it, and just see the work and just, you know, like this is something Dee Reese and I actually had. She's very eloquent on this subject. You know, she's like, don't get so besotted with who made it. You know, look at the work, judge the work, and then and then if it has an interesting story around it in terms of who made it, great. But let's not go in here, you know, judging the person, you know?
I will say, Isle of Dog, I haven't obviously listened to it, but I was just watching the trailer while you were talking to us, Anne, and it looks like a Wes Anderson movie.
Exactly. Even though, it's a classic. Like, it really is.
To your point, if I showed it to Tony before this conversation and said, who do you think did this, you'd have gotten it.
Right? There's a couple of the movies I want to get to. One is called Love, Simon. It's a romantic teen comedy.
Oh, yeah.
So who's in this and what is it?
Did you like this?
Nigel said you liked this movie.
I really liked this movie. It opened last week, but we didn't get to it because why? We didn't do a show last week. Also, it screened a little on the late side, so I wasn't able to really talk it up. But it's a rom-com. It's a really classic, mainstream, middle-of-the-road rom-com a la John Hughes. It's very redolent of the kinds of rom-coms that I grew up with, about a kid in high school who's dealing with first love, but in this case, it's first love and also coming out because he's gay and he's trying to figure out a way to come out to his friends and his family. And it's just a charming. It's you know, often these gay coming out stories, they're in art house movies or they're kind of considered niche. But this is really a mainstream movie that anybody can go to and have a ball.
Can I ask the obvious question?
It's incredibly funny. It's really fun to watch.
This is the obvious question for a movie like that. Is it okay to laugh? Or are we put in a position where we cannot laugh anymore?
Oh no, it's all about laughing, and it's it's incredibly witty and charming, and the most of laughs come from the supporting players. Tony Hale from Veep plays the principal.
Oh yes, I love him. He's the body man. I love him.
He's wonderful. Yes. Yeah. And the great Natasha Rothwell plays their drama coach, and she is just hysterical.
Good.
And the kids, Nick Robinson plays Simon. He's really appealing, and all of his friends are really appealing. It's just, you know, and look, it's idealized. You know, he happens to have the coolest family on the planet, played by Jennifer Garner and Josh Duhamel. So it's highly idealized, but that's part of the escapism and that's part of the fun. And it's just a real throwback to that kind of classic rom-com. It's really charming. I highly recommend it.
The other movie, and you mentioned Tony Hale and you mentioned Veep, the other movie I wanted to ask you about is this movie Death of Stalin, which has an off-putting title. You say to yourself, you can't say to your friends, where are you going tonight? I'm going to see the Death of Stalin.
Oh, first date?
I mean, yeah, it doesn't sound... But the guy who created Veep, who I thought was, is it Armando Iannucci? Is that the guy?
Yes, Armando. Scottish. A Scotsman. Armando Iannucci.
Yeah, and that's such a brilliant idea and show. Even though it's the same show every single week, it makes me laugh every week.
So great.
As we know from our friends who are real life, you know, government people, they all say it's the most accurate show on the air about Washington.
So Death of Stalin, it's good?
It is more than good. It is this one I would send you to, Tony, because it's incredibly. It's about it is about those days after the death of Stalin when there was a scramble for power, including Molotov, the real life Molotov,
not the cocktail, the cocktail,
for whom the cocktail is named, and Khrushchev, who's here played by Steve Buscemi.
Cool.
Yeah.
Who
cool.
is absolutely hilarious, and so there's this kind of tension between there is just absolute like you would think of from Veep, that kind of satirical, slapstick, silly humor. But then
what they
do
with Jonah is so great in Veep.
Oh God, he's fantastic. I mean, it's the same thing. And I mean, who do we have here? We have I can't remember who's now. I'm blanking on the. It's just an amazing cast.
Is this playing anywhere, or is it just playing in New York and Los Angeles?
No, it's in D.C. I reviewed it. It opened last week.
Death of Stalin. Nigel, find out where it is. Is it anywhere that I actually go to?
I was just looking. My internet's down. My phone is down.
Rupert Friend plays Vasily Stalin.
I know Rupert Friend.
Michael Palin, one of the famed
Monty Python. Monty Python.
He plays Molotov. So okay.
Jeffrey Tambor is absolutely hilarious.
Tony, it's playing in Georgetown, playing in Bethesda, and playing at the E Street for you.
Not at Avalon.
No, it's got to get to the Avalon sooner. Oh, yeah, and this is very good.
The Avalon's wonderful.
So enjoy Iowa. Have a good time
in
Iowa.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.
We'll catch up on the other side.
Dan Hornaday, boys and girls. We will take a break. Nigel will do the news when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Squarespace read. The first part of this read I understand. Second part I don't. Here's the part I understand, and it revolves around things you can do with Squarespace. You can create a beautiful website to turn your cool idea into a new website, to showcase your work, to blog or publish content, to sell products and services of all kind, to promote your physical or your online business, and to announce an upcoming event or special project and more. Here's the part I don't understand, and I will accentuate the words that make no sense to me. Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Powerful e-commerce functionality lets you sell anything online. The ability to customize look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything optimized for mobile right out of the box. A new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions. Analytics that help you grow in real time, built-in search engine optimization, free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade ever, 24/7 award-winning customer support. I got that. We're encouraging folks to make it yourself. Easily create a website by yourself. Make it stand out with a beautiful website. Here's where I turn to Michael to say, Michael, you have done this for us.
Yes, we of course use Squarespace. It couldn't be easier to use. What surprises me is the way that you read that means you don't understand the idea of clicking something or the idea of optimization.
And apparently it's troubled by the word functionality.
No, or don't. Even patching something.
Patching. I don't know how to patch.
You used to wear patches.
Yeah, on my pants.
This is internet pants.
It's different.
It's the same idea.
Here's the message right here. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use the promo code Tony to save 10% off your first purchase of a website domain.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a very, very long email here.
It is.
I mean, this is to Michael. Although I highly doubt he will recall them. I've had two memorable encounters with your dad over the years. Nothing would please me more than if one of my band songs featured on the show. First in 1995, having recently moved to D.C. from a town known as Binghamton, New York, having embarked on a career of stapling papers together, I wrote your father a letter at the Washington Post requesting that he give me my first big break in life because, after all, I was from Binghamton. Imagine my surprise when within a day I received a reply. It simply said, "I'd love to help, Dan, but unfortunately you have no talent." I can't believe I said that.
At least you're honest.
Needless to say, I was crushed. As it happened, I was walking through Midtown D.C. the following day when, lo and behold, I came upon a long line outside Farney's Pens. Unbelievably, it was for your dad's book signing for the now classic Pumping Irony. On a whim, I ran back to the office, grabbed his letter, and waited in line for what I knew would be a humorous conversation. Needless to say, the then pre-doctor Tony was initially perplexed as to who I was, but he exclaimed, "Oh, you're the guy from Binghamton." He then graciously signed a free copy of the book, which he unsurprisingly inscribed, "We Kid Because We Love." Fast forward to 2008, I shared one of Tony's columnettes with my 7-year-old son, Tommy, in which Tony had made a mildly disparaging, but in hindsight, well-deserved remark about my hometown of Binghamton. Tommy then informed me he was placing your dad on his enemies list. Cool. Needless to say, I was somewhat concerned by my second grader's Nixonian tendencies, but found it amusing nonetheless. I shared this vignette with my brother, Tim, who at the time was a syndicated humor columnist in upstate New York. I think you can see where this is going. Oh, I do remember this. Tim wrote a column about Tony and Tommy, and when Tony became aware of it, he talked about it on the show at length, and then in another short, thoughtful gesture, he sent me a nice note professing his love for Binghamton and his willingness to buy Tommy a beer when he reached 21. Well, he's 17, but he's eagerly awaiting a cold one on Tony's dime in one of Binghamton's finest establishments 4 short years from now. This is wonderful.
Go to Sharky's.
This is, yeah, we can go to Sharky's. This song is called Lip Syncer, and it's very good. And if people want to do this, and who sent us this? It's not even signed.
Oh, it's not. I'll find out for you.
Up here, maybe?
It's not even signed. No. Who sent it to us?
Hmm.
Because I do remember the column. I do remember the humor column. I do remember all of that. Michael, you listen to songs in full at the end of the podcast. How do we get
them? This is all out of order. Send your music into the show, jingles at tonycornheiser.com.
No, wait. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Are we selling something?
Sure.
What are we selling? We're selling chatter t-shirts for $12 live right here.
You mean 20.
Dan Mullen, MOLLEN.
Don Mullen. Okay, yeah, that's great. Yeah. Dan Mullen.
Dan Mullen.
Very good.
The name Daniel in the email might have given you a clue.
Oh, what are we selling?
We have the Johnny O Hoff Waff code.
Hoff Waff code, H-O-F-W-O-F.
And it looks like this weather is finally going to break, and I know that we are getting ready with our spring break trip.
We're taking a spring break trip at the end of next week. We're taking some time off. This is spring break, Michael and I.
So we're gonna break out some new Prepformans clothes down in South Carolina, the Low Country. Somebody here got an invitation.
Yeah,
and we also have some great show related gear online.
I have to be in the garage. I'm sitting in the garage.
Well, you have to perform a little bit. Yeah, you have a few speaking engagements.
Yeah, great. Hoff Waff code for Johnny O. Nigel, you got news.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And we'll start off, circle back to a story we broke here yesterday. I think we were the first ones to report this news.
The I-Team.
Yes, the I-Team had it first. Dan Hurley leaving URI to become the head coach of UConn.
Okay, the only thing I wanted to say about this that I didn't say yesterday is what on earth is going on with UConn? Kevin Ollie was allegedly... Kevin Ollie, who has won a national championship.
Well, he did, but it was sort of like a Switzer national championship.
Yeah,
but
it was kind of on the tail.
But he won it. Can't take that away from him.
Right. They fired him with cause.
With cause.
Right. They have not announced what the cause is. And there's been no reporting on this. What are you people doing who report? There's no with cause. And I don't know what that's about. I think that... Here's my solution for the University of Connecticut now. Get out of the American Athletic Conference and go to the ACC.
Yeah, it's time.
Go with Pitt and BC and Syracuse. You have a football team. It stinks. But if you go to the ACC, it'll get a little better. Rutgers is in the Big Ten with football. It stinks. Do it. Get to where your basketball team deserves to be and recruit better and just, right?
Yes,
go to the ACC.
That's where they belong.
Go to the ACC. BC ruined life for everybody as we know it.
Probably belong in the
but
Big
that's
East,
the way it is.
Yeah. Yes.
It's the way it is. No, they're not a Catholic school. I mean, those are non-football playing Catholic schools.
Right.
They don't have football. So,
To the NBA, or the association, as we like
this
to call it.
This is amazing.
Here,
this story is amazing.
If you had the Charlotte Hornets by 61 over the Memphis Grizzlies, you win.
You pushed,
yes. Yeah. 140 to 79.
61?
Yeah. 61.
That's unbelievable. It's the biggest margin in the NBA since 1998. That's 20 years.
Kemba Walker, 46 points, outscored the entire Grizzlies starting lineup, who combined for 42. And
he didn't play in the fourth quarter.
Correct.
28 minutes.
He sat.
Only 28 minutes.
26 and 28.
Tony,
that's like Clay Thompson. Tell me if you've ever seen this.
He scored 46 points on 18 shots. Two and a half points a shot, basically.
How did this happen to Memphis? They had Marc Gasol. They had Michael Conley Jr. They were a second round playoff team a couple of years ago. They're awful. They fired a coach this year. They're absolutely awful. Those guys are both hurt. They're terrible. They don't belong in the league. They should be relegated.
I'm checking the record.
They should be in the D
league. Weren't they terrible like right from the get go? Didn't they fire that coach really early?
Fitzdale.
Yeah, they're 19-53.
They're terrible.
That's epic.
It's a good year.
1953 was a good year.
It's Wizards-like.
Yeah, I think Shales was born in 53. I think that's true, right? Isn't that what happened?
No.
What else?
To Kyle Shanahan, there's long rumor that this...
He wanted
Kirk Cousins.
He was upset when they traded for Garoppolo.
Yeah, it's coming out now. General manager for the San Francisco
49ers,
John Lynch, has said, he walked around in mourning for days afterwards. And he said, to his credit, he knew that we had done the right thing.
Garoppolo looks good.
Yeah, but he really, really
wanted... They could have just waited till that season.
And I think Kyle Shanahan would have gone there.
Yeah.
I do. I think Kirk Cousins would have gone there.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I didn't think this story, I mean, maybe nationally, I think it's bigger news than it is locally. I mean, any Redskins fan who was paying attention knew Kyle Shanahan loved Kirk Cousins.
Yeah.
And a lot of people assumed that's where he was going to go.
And Cousins said that.
Said
that he had faith in me long before I deserved it. Yeah. So that was.
But there was no way you were going to go away from Garoppolo after how he played.
Right. No. You got to have him.
Well, after Brady forced that trade, if you believe reports. Right. So there you go. To golf.
By the way, have you seen this thing in ESPN? I don't know if it's the magazine or the website where some guy has rated the dominant. The most dominant.
I saw this. 20 most dominant athletes. 20 dominant 50 athletes. Most dominant
and
athletes.
Peyton Manning was listed above.
Peyton Manning was listed
three.
Third.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady
like
was listed 20th.
That's just insane. What? Yeah.
The hardest thing to do is win a Super Bowl. It's a single elimination tournament. Peyton Manning's got two. Tom Brady's got five and eight appearances. Peyton Manning's got two and four.
And head-to-head.
But in Peyton's defense, he had to go against Brady a bunch.
Well, that's very true.
But I think I was told, I don't know this for a fact, that it doesn't count playoffs. Well, you can't do it if it doesn't count playoffs.
Then it's not most dominant.
What is it?
Right.
What is it?
Well, that would be the Capitals' most dominant regular season team. Right?
Clickbait. Yeah, where were they on the list?
Exactly. Tony Romo has gone from the football field to the broadcast booth to the golf course in a Punta Cana in his first PGA Tour event.
This is in the DR, as we like to call it.
Yes, in the DR.
The Dominican Republic.
Single guy from Colombia in the last month has gone there except me to play golf.
This is the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship.
Yeah.
He shot a 5-over 77.
This is an actual tour event.
But he's there on
what,
an exemption?
Right, this is the opposite field event to the match play, but this has major champion winners in this field.
Major winners?
Yeah. John Daly shot 1-over.
Okay.
Angel Cabrera shot 1-over yesterday.
Oh, okay. All right. This is a real course. These are real pros. He shot 77. He was even after 12. He shot plus 5. Michael, what?
For context, his playing partner, Argyle Country Club's own from Montgomery County, Denny McCarthy.
Who is taught by?
Mr. Bob Dolan.
Bob Dolan.
6-under, first round.
Yeah, he's a wonderful young player, Denny McCarthy. But what do you make? My sense of Tony Romo in a real pro event, shooting 77, not a web.com, I mean a real pro event, is terrific.
It is a great number, and I think if he were to do this a few more times, he would be even better just because he fell to nerves on the greens. He had a couple of putts go in. He produced birdies. He gave himself real birdie looks, as Sansy would say, but he looked a little nervous over those putts inside 6 feet.
Is a bogey every third hole any less impressive or more impressive, I guess, than going 5-over through the last 6 holes, which is what he did? Because you know what I'm saying? If you look at his score, it's almost like, okay, well,
that's
he was on
less
fire
impressive
for 10 holes.
I think that shows.
Can I point something out to you? He's a football player and an announcer.
Well,
he's in a pro event and 77. I know
I'm
he's
not
last.
Trying to sleep on the number.
I thought it was great.
It's great.
So, Gary, to your question, you see big numbers creep up on even the best players. Look at what happened to Tiger Woods on the easiest par 5 just a week ago. The fact that he was able to get back to even par after missing a couple of par putts and losing it on those greens, I think that's the story. You see him control it through those 12 holes.
If you played in an event like this, this event, what would be a number that you would say, I'm so thrilled, I'm just thrilled?
If I'm honest with myself, breaking 80 would be a huge achievement. And again, it would be avoiding triple bogeys. You're going to make a lot of, enough pars, you're going to make a lot of quick bogeys, but it's those big numbers that'll do you in.
And you're probably in the same category as Romo as a player.
Yeah, but he's been practicing for this.
Oh, yeah.
He does not currently have a shoulder injury.
He's played in galleries before, which you haven't.
That's right.
Probably
out
of the nerves.
But, I mean, I think I agree with that.
You actually, the gallery makes very little difference.
If the number starts with 7, I think it's fantastic. I think
it's great.
I really do. I think it's great. I think it's great.
What would you be happy shooting in that tournament?
121.
It's a palindrome.
And Mr. Tony, let me check the calendar. Yes, it is a day ending in Y, so that means there's been more chaos in the White House. Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster.
Wait, who people liked and thought was a steadying influence.
It's one person didn't like him.
He's out as the National Security Advisor, and John Bolton, don't call him Nutlob.
that's right.
Former Fox News commentator.
Well, also, to be fair, former
ambassador.
Ambassador to the United Nations at one point.
Yes.
Under a stable president.
But it would be reasonable to assume that one of the reasons why he got the job is because
Fox
he's on TV.
Fox TV.
So, I like this guy. Let me get him around
Fox
here.
TV.
So this is the third National Security Advisor in the first 14 months.
I assume
months.
That the next Secretary of State after this one will be Chris Wallace.
Chris
Wallace. Because he's on Fox TV.
Exactly.
That's what I'm assuming.
Exactly. Well, maybe some sort of settlement with Stormy. Wouldn't that be great?
He's not the only John Dowd's out.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, Joe DiGenova showed up the other day. Joe DiGenova showed up. Again, Fox News.
I have background on Joe DiGenova.
What?
Someone I know had a blind date with Joe DiGenova in like the 60s.
Nice.
And unsolicited, he decided to sing show tunes on the date. Something.
Does he have a nice voice?
Something from Camelot, I believe. Yes, apparently he has a voice.
Was your friend impressed?
Not a fan, like me, not a fan of musicals. Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Tunes. I'll be right back.
So just order without me. I'll be here.
That was the last kind of day. Fate.
Let me see. Yes, first and last.
First and last day.
It may have been a mutual decision. I'm pretty sure.
That. Don't sing show tunes.
I like that. I'd have gone out another time.
That's the woman's angle that I'm providing.
Yeah. One thought on the timing of this McMaster's thing, because no one was blindsided by this. I mean, it had been rumored that McMaster was one of the guy that was going to go next. But with all the other news that's been swirling around lately this week with the three women situation, perhaps they felt, okay, well, this guy's been I've had him with a foot out the door for some time. Let's do it now and take some of the
change
spotlight
the news.
Off. Yeah.
Change the news.
Unfortunately, I think that drives a lot of the decisions.
I thought when he said he would meet with Kim Jong-un, I thought that was...
So let's see what happens Monday morning after the Stormy Daniels interview. I mean, what...
I doubt she'll say much. The other girl has... McDougal?
The other woman?
Yeah. No, I shouldn't say girl, but I mean, come on, she's 50 years younger than I am. All right, we get out of here.
Do you want one more story?
Oh, what do you got?
Yes.
We've talked for a long time off mic about what we can do here at Chatter to make this a more exciting place and to give things for customers to come in.
Can I just say that one of the things we can do is have you come in tonight for the NCAAs.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And tomorrow and Sunday for the NCAAs,
this is
where
the place.
We have beer specials. We have Sam Adams specials.
Yes. This is the
and
place.
There'll be a creepy guy asking you how everything is.
Yeah, I'm not a pervert. Yeah. I'm just here. But after the NCAA tournament,
I'm an owner.
Can't speak for all the other owners.
And I know one of the ideas that you've been pressing for is to have an axe throwing situation here at the bar. That apparently is the newest fad. It's going on in New York City. Kick axe throwing is the first bar to pick up and I love how they say this, the nationwide trend of axe throwing.
There are two of these in D.C., you know, Nige.
There are actually two of these in Washington, D.C.
We have two axe throwing bars here in D.C.
One of the people from Kick Axe, Alexander Three Finger Stein, says people are like, sharp objects in beer, what a great idea it is. But truthfully, after you have a couple of drinks, you start to actually throw a little bit better. They say it's very similar to bowling in that, and they think this is going to be the next bowling that where that
Ooh,
dominated sort of the
fries.
70s and 80s. This is going to be the next big thing.
Where do they throw them against the wall?
Is it
it's like a dartboard.
They have alleys. Like if you picture like a shooting range, like an indoor shoot, they have like axe throwing ranges.
These are actual axes that weigh 20, 30 pounds.
Yeah, hatchet.
That you when you pick up, around. You could actually slice your own head off.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes,
you could actually slice your own head off.
Or do the Jack Nicholson Scatman Crothers thing from The Shining. Just bury it in someone's chest if they get you angry.
Are you serious?
This is going on. And not only that, there's a World Axe Throwing League. We talk about all the different football leagues coming up. This was just founded a year ago. 2,500 members. And let's see. They say it's bowling 2.0. What bowling?
No, it isn't. Because you can't slice your head off with a bowling ball.
I'm
going to
make a call right now. Summer Olympics by 2024. Summer Olympic sport by 2024.
And that's what he says. The ultimate goal is to make axe throwing an Olympic sport.
Yeah,
so there you go.
YouTube Ed Ames on Johnny Carson.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Remember
just
that a long time ago.
The winning prize for winning the first championship of the axe throwing league.
Pizza?
a
pizza?
It was a 20% off coupon to a cruise. Pizza. No, it was
$3,500. Yeah, we're not. Whoa, that's the big money. We're not going to be doing that here.
Well, not yet.
Not yet. All right, let's get out of here. We will have Old Guy Radio when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. I just think Bobby Darin was one of the more major talents of my life. This is the first big crooner hit that he had, Mack the Knife, in terms of critical commentary. He had been a rock star. He had had Splish Splash, which was a total sort of campy rock tune. Then he had Beyond the Sea, which was a great tune.
Dream Lover.
Yeah, Dream Lover, another great
song. Great song.
This one, his actual name is Walden Robert Casado, I think. I don't think it's Bobby Darin. His mother pretended to be his sister. It was one of those in-house deals that was scandalous in the 40s. This album came out 59 years ago. He was a rock star. He wanted to be Frank Sinatra, and he was. He achieved that. Died very young, like late 30s, early 40s, or something like that. Used to go on the Johnny Carson show. I really did you?
I even liked Queen of the Hop.
Yeah, it's a great tune. He was a rock star.
Yeah.
Until he did this.
Although he was
the Kevin Spacey movie about him is quite good.
Yes. He was the one of the few singers that I and my parents liked. There was enough crossover between him and Sinatra.
And also, he became an actor, married Sandra Day, right? Is that her name?
Sandra D.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Beyond the Sea, was that the name of the movie, or was the movie Mac the Knife?
No, I don't know. Beyond the Sea, I think this is the name of the movie, yes.
So, interesting tidbit, according to Wikipedia, about this single. There were two.
This is from the Three Penny Opera.
Two versions. Did you know that?
No.
There was the 3 minute and 4 second single version, and then the album version, or LP, as we used to call them in those days. You want to take a stab at the length of that one? Not 304. 311.
But why?
What was... I have no idea.
Tough edit right there.
Slower fade?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the satellite. Can you update us on the satellite?
Yes, the Chinese space station is going to crash to the Earth sometime next week. And the question is, okay? Now, what they tell you
is... Is it coming down as a hunk, or is it coming down as a bunch of chunks?
What they tell you, so that you don't panic, is that, no, of course, it's all going to break up, and no, everyone will be fine.
Right.
But then they say, well, there is a chance, something could break away.
They're saying there's a chance.
Of course. then you read headlines like this one online, out of control Chinese space station will crash back to Earth around March 31st.
Oh, is that the day you're flying?
No.
Okay.
I'm going earlier than that. Okay. I don't want to get hit in the air.
Yeah, okay. If that happens, that's just a time's up situation.
Yeah, I don't want that.
In fact, they say only one person has ever reported being hit by falling space debris.
Well, yeah, the others were dead.
Yes, right.
You're going to report it.
Yes. Now, when they say,
this is the question that I have.
Okay.
Is it controllable to the point that if the Chinese were mad at us for a trade war, they could throw it down on us?
Well, if they throw it here, we should collect a 25% tariff, I think. You can't just bring that stuff in.
Again, what they would tell you is that, no, it's falling madly out of control, and no one has any idea where it's going to land. Although they do give you some graphs as to likely or at least possible destinations.
What's the closest one to the 20015?
Well, this is disturbing because it's just a yellow ribbon that runs across the globe, and it runs right through America and including the 20015.
Yeah, I don't want
so that. There's at least a chance it could hit here.
Well, there's a chance it could hit anywhere, though.
Yes. Yeah.
So, all right.
The reporting on this is very interesting. As I read, like in one paragraph, it says the spacecraft, which has been out of control for months after China lost contact with it and couldn't wake it back up, will be incinerated in Earth's atmosphere.
Oh.
But there's still a chance that some debris could come crashing down to Earth. Later in the same story, it says, the space station is big and heavy, and China says that it's likely that a significant amount of debris will survive the friction inferno of reentry. When that material falls to Earth, it could pose a danger to anyone that happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's right. Of course it could.
So there's a chance.
Of course it could. Yes. They're saying there's a chance. So I was confused the other day. I don't know if any of you pay attention to outer clothing, like coats and
outerwear.
I know that one of the more popular brands over the last 15 years or so is North Face.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that is on, you know, the logo is back over your right shoulder.
Was it they misappropriated Obama or Obama promoted it? Remember there was like a billboard of Obama?
I don't know.
I think Obama wore a North Face.
He's allowed to wear a coat.
This was in sort of its infancy.
Yeah,
and a picture was taken of him, and then they used it.
Well, they shouldn't
endorse it.
So North Face is one of them.
Patagonia
and Columbia.
Columbia. Yeah.
I mean, I know that. Yeah. So in the last 2 months or so, I have noticed a repetitive thing on the left shoulder of outerwear coats, mostly dark downfilled coats. And it's a patch, and I wondered, what is this? And I finally got close enough to see one, I was in New York last weekend, and I mean, I don't want to say everybody had them, but you couldn't go 20 steps without seeing another one. And it's Canada Goose. Do you own...
Neiman Marcus, running about $900.
It's a very trendy jacket for the last 4 or 5 years.
Is it that many years?
Yeah, very popular with the
college
crowd.
I haven't had my eyes open that long. Because I went into a fancy store on Fifth Avenue and asked about it and found out that it was pricier than almost any other heavy-duty coat. And by the way, unattractive to me. Not attractive, actually crosses the line into unattractive. Have you seen them, Gene?
No, but I'm always so fascinated by the way I sit here and you guys talk fashion. It's so strange to me. Hear this.
Do you have Michael?
I do not have it, but I think the minimalist look of that coat is intentional so that logo, that patch stands out.
Yeah. It really stands out.
But is
Canada
it like a
Goose.
Puffy coat that makes you look like
Michelin
man?
The big thing is the hood has a very recognizable trim around the upper part.
Right. They have the parka, they have the light down. It looks like $5 to get in the building.
But they're all dark. No. They're all single colored dark. They're not.
Expedition.
I haven't
one
seen
that's,
that.
That's
the one
bright,
with the one
blue.
With the logo on the sleeve.
Good lord, this is for $1,500.
They're very expensive. They're very expensive.
What is gasoline?
Yeah. Are you going to get one?
No. The people that were not.
They sent us a box.
The people that were wearing them were all young. They were 40 and down. No geezer was wearing this thing.
Right.
Canada Goose, which is the logo isn't even attractive. So I just
all right.
I
not
just
attractive but recognizable. I find it interesting that you. Yep. So I don't believe that North Face is as popular as you still think it is.
Well, I don't know.
In that space of it's still expensive like Patagonia, but it's definitely fallen out of favor the same way Eddie Bauer, those big, you know, recognizable brown coats from the mid 90s are no longer.
Well, is it possible? Dad, that you've just outgrown it? Because I know with my teenagers, North Face is what they want. So maybe it's still big with the younger crowd, but now that you're a pop.
See, I think the Patagonia style has overtaken North Face for that age group.
Is Patagonia as expensive as Canada Goose? Is Canada Goose the top of the line?
Yes, and Patagonia has a bit of a social mission to it as well.
Patagonia does.
Yeah.
North Face does not.
Not that I know of.
I mean, you can get Patagonia coats for a couple $100. Canada Goose...
So when I go out, to the Eddie Bauer outlet in Delaware in the summer, I was able to get a coat for $60, like a winter coat for $60 that I never wear because it's in the house in Delaware, so I don't wear it.
Did you get some boat shoes with that?
Not with it. I went across
and the orange pants.
But I mean, I wouldn't. I was amazed at how much money
this
singularly unattractive thing costs.
Yeah.
I mean, $1,500.
It's a lot of money for a winter coat.
For a winter coat, yeah.
I got one story that I wanted to do, and I'm glad Gina's here for this, actually. This involves Serena Williams. Serena Williams played in a tennis tournament in the Miami Open 2 days ago. She lost in the first round to a woman named Naomi Osaka. Serena Williams played as a wild card entry. She was unseated. She'd been, off the tour for 13 months because of her pregnancy. And Naomi Osaka was unseated, even though the week before she had won the Indian Wells tournament, which is a big deal tournament. Mm-hmm. You win Indian Wells. This is an establishing tournament. I don't know why she was unseated, and I understand why Serena was a wild card. The tournament director, James Blake, who was a tennis player of renown himself, said that we've got to do something about women who go on maternity leave. They can't lose their seating. It's not right because they went on maternity leave. We should be applauding maternity leave and we should keep the seating. My position was different. My position was you can applaud maternity leave all you want. You're off the tour 13 months. You're just not what you were when you're off the tour 13 months. Witness the fact that she's losing all the time. She's the best women tennis player in the world, and she will, I believe, get there again, but she's not that now. And I wonder what you think.
Well, yeah.
I don't think you can keep your number
if
you leave the tour.
It's not the same thing as being, say, a partner in a law firm and taking maternity leave and then being assured that when you come back, your job is waiting for you.
Which it should be.
It is not the same thing. And the fact that she lost to Naomi suggests...
And she lost to her sister the week before.
Suggests, that, I mean, with all due respect, all in favor of maternity leave, all in favor of mothers, but yeah, and I don't think... Women would want
that exception
to be made.
She left the tour, and she fell in the rankings because she didn't play at all. And when she got back, she was not the number one player in the world anymore. She may very well be, but she's not right now. I felt that what the tournament director should have done when they had the draw is when he pulled out the slip of paper that said Serena Williams would play Naomi Osaka is eating the piece of paper because it's bad business. Yeah. You don't want to put them in the first round. It's bad business. Don't let that happen.
So isn't there...
And I have no idea why Osaka's on scene.
Some sort of compromise. I mean, I would agree with you both that it seems silly that they would keep their seating, but they should certainly keep their spot. I mean, however many exemptions or something you hold open.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
But isn't she using these opportunities to get back in
the
game?
To play.
That's the idea.
Yeah. This is Tiger Woods.
Right.
Tiger Woods was unquestionably the greatest golfer in the world. He's off the tour for, 4 years minimum? Yeah. He's working his way back.
Yeah, but by virtue of his prior accomplishments, he's exempted from many of these things. I don't know how it works with
and
tennis.
She's and she in too. The tournament.
Right. Okay.
She got a bad draw. She's in the tournament.
Right.
The tournament director should have made that a better draw.
The harder question would be, what if you do not have her pedigree and her... background in terms of how much she has won. If you have somebody
exactly.
who's struggling to stay on the line that keeps you playing.
Right.
And maybe that way there's a, a way to have a call it a medical exemption so that you are allowed to
you
to
gotta
get
be able
back
to get in the
for the next year.
Like Azarenka. This is going to happen to Azarenka too. Well, she was a former number one. You should absolutely be put in tournaments, but you shouldn't be, to me, given some high priority seat because you're going to go out. You're going to go out in the first or second round until you get to where you can play again, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think women want to get where they want under their own gas.
I
think they want to prove that they can accomplish something and don't need some paternalistic, approach to that.
By the way, Serena on that list of the top 50 or 20 most dominant athletes.
She was very, very dominant.
Yeah, she was, I think, 12th or 13th. She was, I believe, the top woman listed.
Tom Brady shouldn't be 20.
No,
not 20. Tom Brady shouldn't be 20.
It's absurd, yeah.
Okay? All right. We'll take a break. We will have email. We will have a jingle. After that, we'll take some pictures, try and sell some Chatter T-shirts for the remarkably low price of $12.
And there'll be bacon.
Yes, and there'll be bacon upstairs. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Some clown just stole a whole box of neckties. Studio security sure came up shy. Gotta find out why. The culprit's gonna lose a hand. Tony's gonna get medieval on this guy. Justice is nigh. Stake it out when the sun goes down. Nigel be the only one around. The studio's on lockdown.
This is great.
Very good.
Wait for it.
So we're going to change the code on the door.
Yes, we have the new code, HOFWOF, HOFWOF.
John Fitzpatrick in Arlington. It's just
brilliant.
Great.
Oh,
writes,
funny.
Stolen box of neckties. Tequila Sunrise by Eagles. Did you know there's this documentary? Before we get into the mailbag, let me thank Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday for coming on the show today. Let me thank the sponsors today, Squarespace and Movement Sunglasses. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. From Tom Green in Phoenix, Arizona. The other day you discussed the ridiculous nature of the Rothschild family controlling conditions in major cities. It sounds crazy, but it would explain a lot of things, like who keeps setting the metro on fire, who pays the worker man to blow leaves during the podcast, and most importantly, where did the red bocce ball go? I'll hang up, grab my shine box, and listen. From John Ozier, I hope I pronounced that correctly, in London, Ontario, in Canada. On Thursday's episode, Sean Lee of Silver Spring wrote in to nominate the cat email from the ESPN 980 days as the show's funniest ever. Both you and Nigel said you didn't remember the email. How can you forget this email? I suspect that at some point down the road, the subject of greatest jingles will come up, and the best that you'll be able to manage is there was this one about a piano. So I guess you remember what you say, but not necessarily what is said by the great Brendan Steenburgen. Do the words "join the conversation" jog your memory? I agree with Sean Lee that this particular email of Brendan's is the funniest I've ever heard on the show. Second place in my book goes to the police officer who wrote in to explain that 100 out of 100 cops would have shot the man who was hopped up on bath salts and eating someone's face. And I don't remember
it,
that.
It was like the Steenburgen was at a conference and he asked us to inundate with like hashtag
G2016. Okay, yes.
Oh, no, I do remember that.
Okay, I do remember that. From Steve Bullington in Zionsville, Indiana. Dear Dr. Grandpa Hoff Woff, this came across my computer today. I thought you'd all like to be warned. Hallmark Channel will air a record 34 new Christmas movies this year.
Boom. Tis the season.
Who writes them so quickly? How do they do them so
chimpanzees
quickly? Start stockpiling on popcorn and hot chocolate because you're in for a movie marathon this holiday season. Entertainment Weekly reports the Hallmark Channel, along with sister network Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, will air a record 34 new original Christmas movies.
Wow.
2018. Wow.
We know it'll fill up your DVR next season.
Ryan Strong from Columbus, Ohio. Today, my girlfriend tells me she did yoga yesterday. I looked up and I asked, "Did you hurt your leg?" Puzzled, she asked, "No, why?" And I said, "Oh, Tony hurt his leg when he did yoga." She rolled her eyes and started going on about how you weren't breathing the right way or you weren't following the right instructions. I just covered my ears and stated, "Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering." I smiled and left the room when she stared at me in disgust. Thank you, Tony and team, for making mundane life just a little more entertaining. From Justin Johnston in Arlington, Virginia. This morning as I was walking my dogs, a man approached us and said, "May I say good morning to them?" I explained that though they are smart dogs, they do not understand the English language, so we should not expect a response, but he was welcome to try to communicate this way. It's very good. From Tom Fountain in Minneapolis, dear Dr. Hoff Woff, our local weather crews here in the Twin Cities say that we're going to be getting somewhere between 0 and 14 inches of snow tonight, but that's just on the grass. Stay on the line for the pavement forecast. That is just unthinkable how stupid it is to say it's only on grass. We're going to get 8 inches, but only
and
on...
And these are supposed to be scientists.
They're clowns. Clowns. From Tom Dore, the great Tom Dore in Chicago, Illinois. The founder of the new football league, the AAFL, Charlie Ebersole, was a year younger than I at Notre Dame. I knew Charlie, but won't say anything about him because all that needs to be said is the fact that he and Luke Russert were close tells all the loyal littles all they need to know. Chuck Walsh, Leonardtown, Maryland, Dr. Hoff Woff, loved the math lesson yesterday. Nigel, so how much do you think the repairs cost? Tony, $3,000. Nigel, it cost $1,700. Tony, I can't believe it cost that much. Grandpa, $3,000, your guess is approximately 44% higher than the actual cost of $1,700. So when the price is lower, how can you be amazed it costs so much? From Claire Natola, do you make Michael enter the codes online for all the second chance Monopoly game pieces you've surely been racking up? Or you just throw those away? I'll enter the codes for you and split any winning proceeds with you 60-40. I'll even let you have the 60. I just toss them.
Ike loves to do that.
I just toss
them. Got us 20 cents off gas.
Ricky Herb in Barnegat, New Jersey. I can't believe no one has asked this yet, but I think my softball team, Unibrew, is the perfect team to be the official beer league softball team of the Tony Kornheiser Show. We're from New Jersey. We win some years and some years we don't, but we've been doing it about 15 years. And while we're getting older, we don't expect to stop anytime soon. I think my plan for next year is to stick pictures of Saliz's face on the baseballs. Even the guys who don't know who he is will love cracking that very punchable face. I love Saliza. Don't do this. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, wear white.
Do it live! Yeah. I'll write it and we'll do it live!
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.